This week's Parsha, Parshas Ki Tse, is always read during the month of Elul, and of course, there's a lot that we can learn from it. Nearly every pasuk can have a drasha connecting it to this time of year, but I'll focus just on a few of them. This week's Parsha is the Parsha with the most mitzvahs in it, which makes sense. It's a time when we're all trying to work on keeping the mitzvahs, on finding as many as we can to pick up and make our own. Many of these mitzvahs in this week's Parsha are mitzvah shebein adam l'chaveri, mitzvahs that relate to the way that I behave with other people. And it's always an important thing to focus on this part of our Shmiras HaMitzvahs. But especially at this time of year, it's important. We're going to get to Yom Kippur. Very soon we're going to get to Yom Kippur. And by then we'll have been through the entire cycle of tshuva. We've done Rosh Hashanah and Aseret Yemei Tshuva and the whole Yom Kippur. And we're all hoping and davening for that kapara that we hope to get, that final forgiveness. But we know that even Yom Kippur doesn't work for mitzvah shebein adam l'chaveri, which means that if I've been negligent in my relationships with other people, unless I turn to them and ask them for forgiveness, Yom Kippur doesn't work. So it's very appropriate that we should come to a parsha that's full of mitzvahs and mitzvah shebein adam l'chaveri. One of the most difficult to understand mitzvahs, perhaps in the whole Torah, is found at the beginning of this week's Parsha. It's the story of the Eisha Sifas Torah. And on Pshat level, it's almost impossible to understand why the Torah allows this. What is this? Why would any Jew even want to do this? Basically, it's when Klal Yisrael goes out to war. It's a Melchemes Rishus. That means it's not one of the seven nations that were commanded to wipe out, but it's a Melchemes Rishus when we're looking to expand our boundaries, and the soldiers are out at war. And I'll mention that these soldiers have all been vetted. In last week's parsha, we were speaking about what happens before they go to war, and the Kohen says that anyone who's scared that they may have sinned should return and shouldn't go out to the war and shouldn't be on the battlefield. So we're talking about an army full of tzaddikim. And they get on this battlefield, and one of the soldiers sees a beautiful woman. He is allowed to take her to his home, and she goes a month of transition until she becomes allowed to him, and probably going through gear. She stays in his home and is made especially unattractive. Her hair is shaved off, she's given unappealing clothing, and her nails are let to grow. She sits at his doorstep crying over her parents and her past. If the soldier still desires her after that period, perhaps there's something more to his attraction to her. So she's going to convert at that point, and he marries her. But in the much likelier outcome that the soldier has long lost interest in her, he must set her free, neither selling her nor making her work for him. That's the pshat level of the story. The Ora Chaim says that we're not really referring to this, but it's a mashal. The Yifas Tayar, that Eishas Yifas Tayar, is the neshama. And when it says that she's crying for her mother and father, her father is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and her mother is Knesset Yisrael. And the neshama, which has been in a guf for the entire year, that perhaps hasn't been doing what it's supposed to be doing, and she's been taken captive by our guf because the neshama has nowhere else to be, but in our body with all of our very mundane and material desires, this captive neshama cries for a month, what the Zohar says is a reference to Chodesh Elul, for this month that we're in. She should take off her clothing, the clothing of Kina and Taifa and Kavod, the clothing of all of our base desires that we wear through the year, and she should do tshuva for the month. And after, achar tavay eleha, after Yom Kippur, we can unite with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we do over the Yontif of Sukkos, meaning that this whole story of Eishas Yifas Tayar, according to Ora Chaim, didn't actually happen. It's talking about us and the process that we're going through this month and the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. We find in this week's parsha also the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, the commandment that if we find a lost object somewhere, it's our chiv to try, it's our obligation to try and find the rightful owner and to return it. But aren't we all, to a certain extent, lost, wandering, and searching for a path back to our owner, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And then there's a corollary to this halacha that says, what happens if you find something and the owner is not near to you? You don't know who, or perhaps you don't know who the owner is at all. And it says that what you have to do is take the object to your house and hold on to it until your brother comes and asks for it, until somehow or another you find the rightful owner. And we can understand it as what happens when we find another Yid, another Jew, who's so far away from the Torah and mitzvahs that he's unrecognizable. Al tis'aleh mimenu. Don't hide from him. Don't pretend you don't see him. Don't pretend you don't know who he is. Va'asafta al teich beisecha. Bring him into your house. Va'yayimcha, he has to stay with you. Adrei shachicha esai. Until his brother, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come and ask for him. And then we're going to return him. Because that's our obligation. Bring him into your house. Bring him close until we return him to our Father in heaven. Another halacha. We have the terrible situation of when an engaged woman and an engagement back then held a much different halachic status than it does today. But there was an engaged woman and she was attacked by a man. There's a difference if this is happening in the city or in a field. If it happens in the city and she does not scream out for help, she is held to be as guilty as the man. Whereas if she's in the field and no one would have heard her scream anyways, then only the man is put to death. The woman is clearly innocent, and the fact that she didn't scream doesn't prove that this was something that she wanted, because it wouldn't have helped her to scream anyways. What we learn from here, says Shimshon Pinkas, is that we need to scream. We need to call out for help. He tells a story about a hospital. Of course, the story has much more, we understand it much better after the 2 years that we've been through. But he tells a story about a hospital that all the doctors were away. Perhaps they were in quarantine. There was only one person on duty in the emergency ward. None of the other doctors were there. They told this doctor, who was a young doctor and a new doctor, they said to him, look, you're the only doctor who's on duty right now, but we understand that perhaps there's going to be multiple emergencies that may happen at the same time. So we're giving you the call button, and this call button reaches the whole hospital. Now, we don't have another doctor to give you because we need a doctor on the ward, the cardiac ward, and we need a doctor on the maternity ward, and we need a doctor. We need doctors on all the different wards. But you're on the emergency ward, which is the most dangerous and the most intense. So if you ever feel like you're in a situation where you need help, just press the buzzer and call all the doctors, and whatever it will ring out in the whole hospital, and whatever doctor is available is going to come running and is going to come and help you. The doctor did indeed encounter one emergency after another, but for whatever reason, he didn't push the call button. And so he was running from one patient to another, and he was trying to adjust this person's tubes, and he was trying to adjust this person's equipment, and he was trying to help this patient, and he was trying to help that patient, and it was impossible. And by the end of the night, he had lost a few patients. A few patients had died. When they brought a malpractice suit against him, he said, I can't believe you're doing this. Do you know what kinds of night I had? It was impossible. I didn't sit down for a second. I ran from one patient to the next. But what was I supposed to do? And they said to him, what were you supposed to do? You were supposed to call for help. You were told to call for help. You were given the buzzer. You were told how to call for help. Why didn't you use it? Why didn't you call? We need to use this month to call for help. And that's really the point. Ki seitzei lemilchama al eivecha, the parsha begins, and Chazal say, we're not talking only about the wars that Klal Yisrael fights, but we're talking about our own individual war, ki teitzei, one person, not ki teitzeu, but ki seitzei, you, when we, every single one of us, are going out to war against our enemy. There are many enemies. There's only one Yetzirah, but he takes on many, many different forms. And the important thing is to realize that this is a war and to fight it. because we often don't see it that way until it's way too late. The main thing we need to do is fight the battle. And if we do, we have a promise that we will be successful. Hashem says, all you have to do is go out, and I'll give him to you. I'll give you the enemy. In Parshas Bahalaisra, we see a different description of war. The Pasuk says, V'chisavayu melchama ba'artzachem, a war is going to come to your land. What you have to do is, V'harei oisem b'chatzaytois, you have to go and you have to blow your horns and you have to daven, and then Hashem is going to save you. And it's interesting because it seems like in this week's parasha, it just says, Kiseitze el melchama, go out to war and Hashem will give them. In Parshas Ba'alaisra, it says that we have to blow the shofar, and we have a whole process of things that we have to do. The Shem Shmuel says in the name of the Kotzker that the difference is, in our parasha this week, Kiseitze el melchama, we're going out to war preemptively. We're starting to fight before the enemy gets to our land. But in Parshas Ba'alaisra, V'kisavayu melchama ba'artzachem, it's too late. The enemy has come into our land, and we'll need all kinds of tactics to get rid of him. A preemptive battle is always much, much easier. The Beis Yisrael says that this was the difference between the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War. In the Six-Day War, the Israelis went out preemptively fighting Yom Kippur War. The enemies were already in our land. And he says we have to learn from this how to fight the Yetzer Hara. Don't let him come in. Fight him as soon as you feel like he's trying to approach. Don't wait to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Start now. Start today. Start in El. It's interesting that both in Parshas Re'eh and in Parshas Nitzavim, we're given a choice. We are told, look and choose which path you want to go on. But in Parshas Re'eh, the choice is between Bracha and Klala. I'm giving you the Bracha and I'm giving you the Klala. Choose the Bracha. Whereas Parshas Nitzavim, it's more complicated and much more intense. The choice is Hachayim ves hatayv ves hamaves ves hara. I'm giving you life and death. At the beginning of Chodesh Elul, Parshas Re'eh, we read 2 weeks ago, it's still so much easier. We can easily choose Bracha. But in Parshas Nitzavim, we are down to the wire. Parshas Nitzavim is always read right before Rosh Hashanah. It's almost Rosh Hashanah, and now it's a battle, a hard battle of life and death. The parshiyos reflect the time of year that we're in. We have many opportunities to win this fight, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised us the help that we need to win this fight, but we can't wait. With every day, the Yetzer Hara gets stronger, and we want to use this month that we have to cry out and to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.